Hey everyone, and welcome back to Beat the Sheets, an Xbox Game Pass challenge. The only podcast aiming to complete every single one of the over 300 titles that have been made available on Xbox Game Pass since the start of 2020. As always, I'm your host Andy Wood, and I'm joined by my co-host Josh.
Hello, I am Josh.
So, on this week's show, we have lots more details on one of the next-gen consoles and absolutely nothing on the other one. We are in the mood for Doom, and the latest Super Smash Bros. Character reveal knocks Twitter's block off.
It beat it up.
It did.
Smash Bros. Beats up Twitter? Oh my god.
We will.
Is Twitter okay?
It's recovered now, but we will get to it.
Oh.
So,
yeah. You know Miyamoto with that level of violence in it. My god. That Sakurai. He's a dark horse.
They've pushed Sakurai too far this time. He's gone. But anyway, how are you doing this week, Josh?
Well, I'm okay, you know. I've been playing a lot of Doom, which we'll be talking about later. So I'm angry and I don't quite know why, but that's Doom for you. It just makes you mad. Just makes you want to smash a wall because you smash a lot of walls in Doom. And I always look at walls now and think, could I smash that wall? I can't smash a wall. But other than that, I've just been looking lustfully at those Crash Bandicoot 4 reviews. I really want to play that game. I love Crash, love 3D platformers, and part of my soul just cries a bit that I'm not going to be playing that anytime soon, if ever. But we'll see. We'll see. How about yourself?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. I did make an impulse game purchase this week, but it sadly wasn't Crash. It was Star Wars Squadrons instead, which is, it's entirely fine. I kind of wish I would have spent the extra 20 quid and got Crash, but here we are.
Why don't you just wait for that to come into EA Play or Game Pass in like a year's time?
EA Play is just a bit, it's not the same, right? It's going to take about a year maybe for this to show up in it. So I thought, screw it. It's only £35 brand new, which, you know, is literally half the price of a PS5 game. So so I thought, yeah, I'll give it a go. But I don't know. I've only played a couple of hours, but it feels really slow, which is weird. I thought it'd be a little bit more exhilarating than that, but nonetheless, I'll give it a bit more time when I can get around to it.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a good time. I like the look of it. I like X-Wings and TIE Fighters and whatever else they're called. Do you get to fly a Falcon? Is there a Falcon in this?
No, it's just kind of bare bones basic space vehicles in this one. Just like X-Wing, Y-Wing, that kind of stuff. So there's no flashy, famous spaceships, sadly. But
Do you know what I would play if EA is listening, and I hope you are? Death Star management game.
Yeah.
Come up with a game where I build a Death Star and I try to turn it into both a planet destroying homunculus and at the exact same time also try to make it a fun place to live. So it has theme parks and has shopping districts, and you kind of got to keep things going to keep morale up so that the murder can continue faster. I think that is actually a legitimately good idea. So EA, if you want to send your check for about, I don't know, I'll give you it for 10 grand. Yeah, just send it my way. I think that's a good idea.
I mean, maybe we can just go directly to Disney. I mean, I think the EA Star Wars deal, it must be coming up at some point. So we'll just use this to get Star Wars exclusively for ourselves.
God, that'd be funny, wouldn't it? Can you imagine if they just transferred the Star Wars license to two absolute idiots?
Yeah, here's some garbage tiny indie game made by these two guys. That's all you get them for Star Wars now.
Oh, God, that'd be great. But
I would love that.
Oh, well, we could dream. We'll hold out hope. You never know. It could happen. I tell you what did happen, though. There's been a single new addition to Xbox Game Pass this week. And it's a good one.
Yeah.
We're starting to see the fruits of that Bethesda deal straight away because Doom Eternal, a game which only came out in March, is already available on the service. Obviously, we all know what Doom is. I mean, everybody's played Doom. If you've not played Doom on a toothbrush, have you even lived? But this is the modern kind of spin on Doom, started in 2016 with that fantastic kind of reboot. Really good game, and I've been looking forward to this. It's been sat on my shelf for a while, so this was a good excuse to pick it up and play it. But before I go into some thoughts on that, I just wondered if you had any general ideas on how you feel about Doom Eternal coming to the service.
I mean, I'm really excited about Doom Eternal, that's for sure. I think Doom 2016 is just a kind of, it's such a good shooting game. It's just a rush of constant angry adrenaline, and I just love it. So I'm very excited to play this. I'm going to be holding off until it comes to PC because they have said it's coming into Game Pass for PC before the end of the year. So I don't know. I've got to a point now where I don't know if I'm just an old man, but I'm awful at shooting games on controllers, whereas I'm quite good with a mouse and keyboard. So I'm going to hold off. But yeah, I can, even without playing this game, I know it's something that everybody should be picking up and having a go of.
Well, I've played about 70% of it now. I've really hammered some Doom this past couple of days. And yeah, it's definitely worth playing. It's very much more the same. If you like Doom 2016, you're going to like Doom Eternal. There's a few tweaks to the formula. It's a little bit more vertical than it ever has been. There's a lot more posts and things to swing from, a little bit more platforming. They try to make it so that you're constantly moving around the arenas, which they drop you in, flying over the top of people's heads and then shooting them on the way down. And it's really good fun, and it works pretty smoothly as well. For first-person platforming in particular, which can be, you know, iffy at the best of times. Yeah. But this one's pretty generous in the amount of, you know, leeway it gives you for actually grabbing onto things. So it plays the same sort of way. It's super fast, super brutal. All the weapons have 10 times the punch of most video game weapons that are legitimately satisfying to use. And you're just unlocking upgrades, like, seemingly every 5 minutes. Like, once you've got one great weapon, like, 15 minutes later, you've got an even bigger one. Mm. And you're just destroying stuff. It's just a really good game. It really is. There's a fun upgrade system as well, which they've kind of implemented some of the weapons, so you can add different, like, add-ons and mods to them to blow stuff up and destroy more things. And, yeah, it just plays like more Doom. I mean, who could complain with that? It's like Doom, but probably a little worse, but not by much. I still think this is a really good game. It's a hell of an adrenaline rush, if nothing else.
Yeah, that sounds about right to me. So would you say that, because obviously right now Doom Eternal's in Game Pass, and we basically know that the original Doom is going to come back in. It did used to be in Game Pass, but now that Microsoft owned Bethesda, it will be making its way back in. Do you think people should just jump straight into Doom Eternal, or would you say it's maybe worth them waiting out a bit longer and doing the 2016 Doom first?
I have absolutely no idea really what's going on in Doom Eternal, and I played Doom. So partly because I kind of got into the Doom Slayer mindset, where in most games I do read the lore and I do listen to the cousin. I ignore everything in Doom. I just shoot things. I don't care who I shoot, I just shoot. So I don't know what's going on. And I played Doom, so I don't think it makes a radical difference. All you know is scum needs to be shot and you're the one to shoot it. And that's literally all you need to know, to be honest with you. It probably is slightly more lore-heavy than the original Doom was. The original Doom made a real point of the Slayer being bored by the concept of exposition. This one kind of actually does try to tell more of a story. It's, you know, bad people are trying to kill people. That's literally it. And you're even worse than they are. And you're going to just destroy them, you know. But
yeah, that's all you need for Doom, isn't it, really? That's fine.
That's literally it. You know, Doom guy remains just an absolute joy. As just this this horrific freak who everybody kind of like reveres and at the same time is terrified of. I love any time in this game when you come across a human and it's like, oh my God, you're the Slayer. And they're like saying, it's so nice to meet you. And this guy has a key card and he doesn't even bother to take it off his neck. He just drags him by the neck all the way to the clearance pass and throws him back again because he doesn't care. He just wants to kill. It's great. Good for that.
I like how all of the kind of 90s video game mascots and characters, like, they've either had to like adapt to being a bit different now and like modernize themselves, or they've just fell by the wayside, like a kind of Duke Nukem that is just kind of feels dated and a bit horrible now. And then you've just got Doom guy, and he's the same as ever. He's just a big angry man just destroying everything, and it's great.
It just works. I mean, all the levels are packed full of secrets, like all good Doom games should be. Of course. Plenty to explore. The platforming actually makes the exploration probably a little bit better. You know, it's a bit more fun to actually be throwing yourself around the maps a little bit more. It just plays really well. And just like Doom 2016, it's so fast that I can only really play it for about an hour or two at a time before I just get the worst motion sickness because it's so ridiculously quick. And if you catch like an overcharge power-up, it's almost like he's going faster than I can even react. He's just disgustingly quick. Yeah. But it's just a hell of a good time. I'll probably have it beat just the minute this podcast is finished. I'll just go back and smash out the final couple of levels of Doom. But yeah, this is a good game. This is well worth checking out.
That sounds great. So anyway, yeah, as you said, there's only the single new edition this week. So we'll get rolling on to our Leaving Soon titles. So we've got three games that are now leaving Game Pass, and these are going to be heading out on October the 15th. So still quite a while to play them. So we've got Felix the Reaper, Minute, and Metro 2033, which is the final Metro game to leave Game Pass, and yet also the first Metro game in the series. So that's great. So yeah, what were your thoughts when you saw this new list of free games, Josh?
Well, it's mercifully short. Let's be honest at that. Free games is pretty simple, and two of these are pretty small indie games, which you could probably beat in an afternoon if you wanted to. I mean, I'm glad that the Metro series will end here for us, because I'm so tired of playing these games.
I'm so sick of it.
And the way we've played them, where we have no clue what is going on. We're finally going to get fill in all the blanks of this series in this title. And I'm still not certain I'm going to understand what actually happened. But, you know,
You're not going to. There's no chance.
One more journey with Silent Artium, and then hopefully they just don't make any more of these games. No offense to the devs of Metro, I just can't play any more Metro games. Like, this is it for me. It's got to stop.
It does have to stop. It's like, yeah, I mean, for a series that I just don't enjoy it. Like, to have to play the whole thing in the last, what, 3 or 4 months, it's just been... Oh, yeah, it's been a bit much. But as you said, thankfully, it's a short list, only 3 games. The other two are particularly short. They only run a few hours long each. So, yeah, it's been more bearable than it could have been, I guess.
May I just say that having to go from the liquid smooth motion of Doom Eternal to Metro 2033 is going to be absolutely horrific.
Oh, God.
It's just going to be awful. Just plugging away. I mean, the weapons in Metro are terrible. They have no punch to them. And it's just going to be so disappointing when I plug that game in and try and play through it on what it calls a Spartan mode. It ain't no Slayer. Let me tell you that. It's got Knout on the Slayer. Oh. Stupid RTO. Hate RTO.
Yeah, I can't even comprehend how much that's going to suck. Like, just two completely opposite philosophies, right? Doom is just like all buttery smooth, pure action. And then Metro just revels in being miserable. So it's going to be so upsetting for you. Oh, but anyway, Metro is a conversation for next week, because this week we're going to be running down Felix the Reaper and Minute. We'll start off with Felix and his reaping activities. So, how did you find this one, Josh?
Felix the Reaper is just a massive fraud of a game. I remember reading so many previews about this game because I liked the way it looked, and I liked this idea of this dancing freak going about performing his reaping duties. And somehow in my mind, I got this convinced that it was a rhythm action game and that the music was going to play into the puzzles and how you ended up killing people. Mm-hmm. And you're basically just going to be dancing on their graves, which I thought would be a funny, pretty macabre subject. Turns out Felix the Reaper is a tedious puzzle game where you're just trying to stay in the shadows just all the time. It's like a stealth game without any of the joy of stealth, or the puzzle game without any of the actual joy of working out a puzzle. It's utterly tedious. It's just not what I thought it was going to be, and I don't think I ever quite got over that.
Yeah, I agree completely, actually. I don't know what it was about this game, because I can't really go back and remember all of the advertising and all of the kind of preview content and stuff, but I absolutely got a similar impression. I thought this was I thought it had some kind of energy to it, you know. It was like a rhythm action game, a bit of interactivity, whereas actually, yeah, it's just a very, very simple puzzle game dressed up by having a Reaper man that dances around while you're waiting to give him the next command. Like, it's so just basic. And I wouldn't even mind, like, the core gameplay mechanic, it's solid. It's a bit, you know, a bit simple. It probably needed to go somewhere else. But I kind of agree with you. I think I was damaged by just thinking this was going to be something better than it is.
Yeah, it's a brutal realization. I mean, as you said, the core puzzle mechanic. So essentially here, what you have to do is you need to reposition something in the world so that it kills somebody, basically. You know, instead of they're going to catch a dog, they're going to get rammed by a goat. Whatever it is, you've got to change up the world, but you can only do this by moving in the shadows. And how you move is you rotate the sun just 90 degrees. There's only one way it can go. Mm-hmm. And you put obstacles in the way to create shadow and make your way over to the objective. It's as simple as that. It's not radically complicated. And that's the problem. It's not radically complicated. And the minute you've done the first level, you've played Felix the Reaper. It never develops its concept. It might say, the only time it develops its concept is now you can put, you can stack two fins on top of each other. This is the gameplay development the devs managed to come up with was, what if we just pile two barrels on top of each other?
Yeah.
That's it. And it's just becomes a slog after like three levels of the first chapter, which is never a good sign.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the issue is that basically it, as you said, it doesn't really expand the puzzle beyond just he has two barrels on top of each of us, so now the shadow goes further. So what they end up doing in the later levels, rather than expanding the mechanic in a fun way, is they just get really, really obtuse with how you're meant to solve the puzzles. Like, I just felt like by the end, I mean, luckily there's a hint system in this game that you can completely abuse without any penalty. And I may have done quite a lot of that by the end of the game. But like some of the later puzzles, they just wanted these really specific positions for all the barrels and stuff. And I'll be honest, I was never going to get them without having a cheeky look at the odd hint. Because I just, I don't know. I just thought it was too awkward for something that wasn't interesting, basically.
And the problem with it is, because all puzzle games will sometimes require you just to sit and take a bit of thought. And as we mentioned earlier, Felix never stops dancing all the way through this game. And so I started to just hate the fact that whenever I was just sat still thinking, because I couldn't figure out where this bloody barrel was meant to go, it was just gyrating against a pole. I was like, will you stop it, you annoying cretin? It's like the opening of this game is narrated by somehow Patrick Stewart. I don't know why no Patrick Stewart happened. Is doing this. This blows my mind why this man is doing this. It must have been a very slow day. And he basically says, oh, will you keep the dancing to a minimum? You know, we don't want that sort of jovality. And you're thinking, oh, stop being such a square, Stuart. He's going to dance as much as he wants. Tell you what, two missions in, I was with Stuart. I was like, will this guy stop dancing? Like, it just really started to work me. And I wish you'd stop. It's just a bizarre game. The music as well, for a game which is, you know, this guy is dancing all the time. So you think, well, he must be dancing to some pretty good songs. The music's really just general background stuff. It's not particularly catchy. It never gets in your head. It's not offensively bad or anything, but it's just general video game background noise. It's neither good nor bad. It just exists. And therefore, I don't see why they made such a big deal about the fact he likes to dance all the time. It doesn't impact gameplay. It doesn't impact the story. The music's not particularly good. It's literally just so they could do the stupid gyrating animations. That's the only thing you get from it.
Yeah, I mean, he's fairly well animated. I'll give him that. But I agree with you. I mean, the problem is, of course, that we're both pretty big fans of kind of music and rhythm games. You know, we were talking like last week about all the great ones from the DS and the 3DS and stuff. And yeah, like it just felt like a waste of that entire... Like, I don't know, the entire narrative around the game and the way they were presenting it to people. Like, why not go a different route if all it is a puzzle game where the man tends to just stand there and dance and annoy you while you wait to do the next move? Because there's nothing musical about the game. I mean, I only finished this game 2 days ago and I genuinely can't recall a song from this game. I don't know any of the music from this game. It's like I've not heard it. I've got nothing for you. So
yeah, it just completely really passes you by, doesn't it? I mean, the game has this really, the art style of it is nice enough. It goes for this like grotesquery kind of look where everybody's oversized and quite hideous. And so, you know, you've got giant legs and giant, it's just a load of fat freaks basically, which is fine. And it looks pretty okay.
Yeah.
There's this weird tacked-on love story, which they reference at the start, forget about for the entirety of the game, and then briefly mention right at the end, I meant to care. And
that's the thing, though. That's another thing from them kind of misrepresenting this game a bit, is that like there was loads of stuff in the previews for this, and also in the I think it's in the description of the game, where it kind of builds itself as this like romantic comedy, and it's like, Nothing happens. You're right. There's a brief minute long cutscene at the start of the game and they drag it back at the end for something that also just feels irrelevant. Like, it's not there, is it?
It's neither romantic nor funny. So, yeah. You know, a better exact description would have just been a tedious mess. But, you know, look, this game controls just about fine. It'd be better on a mouse, but it does work okay. Because it's turn-based puzzles, it's never too frustrating. But occasionally putting a barrel where you want it becomes a bit of a nightmare. Mm. But it's fine. It's just tedious. It took me about 3 hours to complete it. And the thing about this game is I booted this up about 6 months ago, thinking it was going to be this game I enjoyed. And we're all about quick completions on Beat the She. I mean, of course, I knew this game was only going to take 3 hours. So I was like, well, I might enjoy it and it's only going to be 3 hours. I played the first hour and I couldn't be bothered to finish the other two. This is how tedious it was. It's only now that I'm being forced to complete it that I have completed it. I mean, that tells you everything you need to know about Felix the Reaper.
Yeah, I kind of had like almost like an opposite thing where basically I just made myself hammer it out in one sitting. Like I'd done about 2 hours of it and I was just relentlessly bored. And I went to turn it off, but I thought, you're not going to want to turn this on again. So I just put my head down, just got on with it and just got it out the way. But yeah, I mean, there's a chance we sound more negative than we need to, I guess, overall. Like, this is entirely fine. The puzzles are okay. It just doesn't really go anywhere. You know, so I've came out giving this like a 5 out of 10. So it's not, you know, we've had worse games on the show, but it's just so like bang average that there's nothing interesting about it.
Yeah, I gave this a 5 as well because it's not a bad game. It's just a boring game.
Yeah.
And some people might like to be bored. I don't know. Maybe some people just need something to uninfused to at the end of the day, just drift into a pool of nothingness. It'd probably be great to get yourself to sleep. So, you know, maybe as a sleeping aid, it'd be quite good. But frankly, by the time it was finished, I was counting down the minutes. And speaking of minutes, here's our next
natural segue.
That was good, wasn't it? Our next game is called Minute, and it is possibly one of the best indie games on the Xbox Game Pass service, which everybody owes it themselves to play before it goes. So I'll let you kick us off on this one, because I know you're a big fan of this game.
Yeah, I love Minute. I bought this the day it came out, because the mechanic was just an instant buy for me. I just thought it looked great. And this idea of basically having a 1 minute long cycle, like your life in this game is always 1 minute long, and you have to use that time to just get around the map and find new areas and get new items and abilities that you get to retain for your next lives and next runs and stuff. And it's such a satisfying gameplay loop, and I loved it. I agree with you completely. I think this is something that everyone should find the kind of 3 or 4 hours that it needs to play it before it leaves the service, or just buy it, because it is fantastic stuff. Yeah, big fan of this one. We actually have talked about this very briefly on the show before, because it was part of our lightning round from episode 5, where we only had 1 minute to talk about every game. So we did a minute on minute there. But yeah, we can definitely... I'm glad we've got a chance to spend a bit more time talking about why it's so great now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just as you mentioned, the mechanics is fantastic. 60 seconds and then you die. Everything you have to do has to be completed within that 60 seconds. It's essentially plays like a top-down Zelda.
Yeah.
But in a black and white style, like the Majora's Mask hook, but instead of it being a full day, you've got just 60 seconds to do it. It's just very clever. It's like the Zelda on crack, essentially, by the time you finished. Everything has to be done quickly. And when I bought this game, I loved the concept, but I kind of thought it might frustrate me that I'd only got 60 seconds and then I'm back to the beginning. I thought, oh God, this is going to be like a roguelike. And it's not, because it's actually fun, but also because you do make progress in those 60 seconds.
Yeah.
You learn so much about the map every single time you venture out. You may go down to a different square and discover something there. You may find a little cabin where you can start from again, because you find little checkpoints around the map where you can respawn from after 60 seconds. So you are making progress. You are moving the game forward. And it at no point becomes a confusing slog. You're just constantly making progress, constantly discovering new things, learning new abilities, learning new mechanics. And it just unveils itself so gradually and so cleverly that I can't believe the idea hasn't been done before. And I already think they've pretty much nailed it. I don't think they're going to do much better than this. This is a really good game.
Yeah, I think they've taken the format that they were going for and basically just achieved it to perfection in this game. Like, I don't see I don't see any part of it where I think, oh, you know, they could have tightened that bit up, or, you know, maybe this part had some pacing issues. Like, there's kind of none of that. It just, every kind of respawn I had in this game felt satisfying. I always felt like I was trying to achieve something. I was trying to, you know, I was trying to figure out something, whether it was just, I'm going to go and explore this new area, or maybe I went to that area last time and I noticed something interesting with just a few seconds of my life left, so I'm going to go back there and investigate that further. Like, it always felt like I was doing something. I never had a time where I just felt like, oh, I don't even know what to do with this minute or this life. So I think that's a huge achievement for a game like this.
And it's packed full of side stuff to do as well. I mean, there are missions and people in the game you meet who are completely separate to the main story. And that's really clever, because it's not easy to build side missions into a game like this and still have them work within the time mechanic which they've built. I remember one interaction with somebody where he very slowly spoke to you, and you're just constantly looking at the clock like, hurry up, and he's talking so slowly, and you're like, no, quick, tell me what you have to say. Just counting down the seconds until you die at his feet, but you just got the information which you needed in time. And it's just does things like that all the time. It's coming up with lots of clever new things, loads of upgrades to make your character better. Character design as well, by the way, is fantastic. I love the look of this little, kind of like this duck freak egg thing. And it's just really cute and quite endearing. I like how he swings his sword. It is very Zelda. Yeah. Very Nez Zelda. It's just a really good game. Really
absolutely. And also a shout out to the music in this game is fantastic. This is some real, you know, it's all kind of chiptune retro music, but it's top tier. It really is. It's just such a fantastic soundtrack. Like, I didn't get sick of it. And obviously you hear the same music quite a lot in it. It's not got a ton of different tracks, but I was always happy to listen to it.
Yeah, the music's really good. The sound design's great as well. I love the tick of the clock as it starts to tick down towards 10 seconds. They just get heavier and louder, like these clicks just become really thunderous, like, you know, like you're in a horror movie and the clock's ticking towards midnight and something's banging at the door, and it kind of evokes that panic where you think, I've just got to very quickly do this, in the same way that, like, say Sonic's water theme does, when, you know, you're desperately looking for an air bubble. It gives you that same endorphin rush every 60 seconds, which is incredible. It's such a fun thing to have in a game where you're constantly racing against something to achieve something. It's just so fun. It's so clever. And yeah, I just think it's top tier work. It really is.
Yeah, completely agree. I mean, that's about everything there is to say on Minute, really, but just definitely do play it, whether it's a case of buying it or whether you just play it in the next sort of 10 days or so. It's something that shouldn't be missed. I gave this an 8 out of 10 in the end, but in truth, it's really not that far from a 9 when I think about it.
Yeah, I gave this an 8 as well. It could easily be a 9. Shout out to the final boss fight, which is really clever and brings the whole thing full circle in a very smart way. And the whole story wraps up very cleverly as well. It's just very good. It's very well written. Very well written. The character dialogue's fantastic in this, just to quickly mention as well. That it is cleverly written. It's not just, you know, a fun mechanic for 60 seconds. The dialogue is punchy, snappy, funny. And the whole world feels realistic and lived in. Not an easy thing to do. Not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Completely agree with that, actually. They've done a great job of managing to have quite distinct different areas, even though it's effectively a game where you've got 1 minute to live. It's a really good achievement. And I'd love to play a sequel. And I don't know if that's even feasible, because they've already nailed it.
Yeah, does it need a sequel? Probably not. Would I play it? Absolutely. But certainly, if you have an Xbox Game Pass subscription, play Minute. Don't waste your time with Felix the Reaper, because he sucks anyway. And if by now you're still playing the Metro series, why are you playing it like we are? You freaks. What's going on?
I love the idea that someone in the world is following along with us and playing backwards Metro for no reason. Great.
Just drop it all and play Minute. It's a great game.
Yeah. All right then, so moving on to our final segment of the week, it is time for some news. Probably the biggest news this week isn't about the next-gen consoles necessarily, it is about Super Smash Bros. And the addition of Steve from Minecraft to that game. So I mentioned earlier on that Twitter had a bit of an issue, and that was because Twitter basically crashed when this was revealed. It seems as though, there was too much tweeting about Steve from Minecraft joining Super Smash Bros. And it did kill Twitter.
That's pretty bad, isn't it? I didn't know people like Minecraft this much still. Is this still this popular? Are people really this big on Steam still? I mean, wow.
It seems blows to my be. Mind. I mean, yeah, I was listening to a different show that had some MPD sort of sales numbers for, I think it was for last month. And Minecraft was like still in the top 10 for like sales that month, even though it's been out for what, about 6 years now. So, you know, it's somebody somewhere doesn't own Minecraft still and they are buying it, which is impressive. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's cool. It's a big reveal. It's not what I want from my Smash Brothers characters personally. I think I'm a bit weird with my Smash Brothers stuff because I almost prefer the music that gets added over actually playing the game. I just want characters to get added that can have really good, like, you know, like top tier remixes made for the music in the games and stuff. And yeah, you don't get that from Minecraft, but obviously there was a lot of people who were happy with seeing this. So yeah, where do you stand on the Steve issue?
I mean, I don't play Minecraft, so I don't care.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, it looks to Sakurai, it looks like he's had to do a hell of a lot of work.
Oh god, yeah.
To get this character to actually work in the Smash format, because obviously it's also blocky and everything's going to have to be reworked slightly to actually fit him into the game. I saw the video he did after the reveal where basically he'd said that he couldn't do it, and then Nintendo executives gave him a look over their dark sunglasses and said, "Can't you?" And he was like, "Okay, I can."
Yeah, that video was great because he was like, Sakurai was so candid about the whole situation. Right? He was like, "I think they just think some kind of magic happens," and then it's like, "There you go. There's Minecraft in Smash Brothers." And then, like, you know, he's going on about how they had to go back into every single map in Smash Brothers to make sure you could build on them because Minecraft characters build and stuff. And, you know, yeah, I like how blunt he was with it. He's just like, "Yeah, this is impossible. We shouldn't do this, but we did it. Here it is." So enjoy this now, I guess. And yeah, I mean, look, you know, it's the character looks cool, like in terms of how it plays. Like, Sakurai looks like he's just done some crazy stuff here, and you know, he does it with all the DLC characters, to be fair, but like the way it plays looks really unique and interesting and really creative and stuff. But yeah, it's not the character I was looking for myself, but nonetheless, it's still a big addition to the series.
I mean, kudos to the guy who is at this point having to balance 80 different characters across one game and somehow make them all play correctly on all these stages, of which there are many. And all of them have their own like charm and candor and humor. It's quite incredible what he has to do every single time a new character comes out. The man needs a break, but I guess
he
gives us four more fighters.
Well, even then, though, who knows? He said this is the last Fighters Pass, but when they did the first one, he was like, "We're definitely not doing any more of this because, you know, I'm going to die." And then, like, and here we are. There's just a second one. So, yeah, that man desperately has earned a long rest, but he won't be getting it for about another year yet, sadly.
Well, yeah, before he has his rest, who should he put in Smash? As I said, there's four spaces left to fill, as it were. So who could actually be a good Smash character who isn't already in there? Because let's be honest, pretty much everybody's in there now.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was the whole meme-y thing from the reveal, wasn't it? Of like, everyone is here. Like, so yeah, everyone is there. But as I said, I'm big on getting some good music in there. So I would, like, top of my list is always going to be Phoenix Wright. I want Phoenix Wright in there. I want to be fighting in the courtroom. I want, you know, awesome remixes of all the really intense Phoenix Wright music, like when you've finally sort of cornered someone in the courtroom and they're starting to panic and stuff. I want to fight people to that music. That would just be great. So that's my top pick for definite.
I tell you who I've wanted in after just playing it for the past few days. Let's get Doomguy Smash Bros. Oh my god, could you imagine? That would be so good. Plus the Doom music, especially from the 93 original, is iconic.
And oh god, that'd be great.
So many good remixes of that song. Oh, that just for the reveal video.
The reveel would be amazing.
It'd be insane.
Just picks up Kirby and just rips him in half. There's like guts everywhere.
You know, let's have to slay you in Smash. That's exactly what I want. Let's get Doomguy in Smash. That would be incredible.
That would I'm on board for those two picks, absolutely. I'm actually quite happy with this. There's quite a big swell of fan support behind the idea of getting Sora in from Kingdom Hearts. And I don't care about Sora at all, but Kingdom Hearts, again, does have good music. So they can have their character. I'll have the nice music. Thank you.
Plus, that big key is pretty cool.
Yeah, you can just bash some people with a big old key. You know, I guess if you're bringing him in, though, you've got to bring a bunch of Disney people in, right? So it's got to be a minefield for the legal side of things, because he's, you know, he's with like Donald and Goofy the whole time in the game, so they'd need to be there. So yeah, can't see that one happening.
Can't see it. Crash Bandicoot as well would be quite fun in Smash. He has a good move set which would translate well, and the music's pretty good from those Crash games, so that would be fun too. There's still good characters who could drop in. We'll see who gets announced. It'll probably be the Ring Fit trainer, and we'll all be somewhat disappointed. I tell you who definitely shouldn't go in, though. That's Waluigi, because Waluigi sucks. And I stand by it.
I just don't think there's any interest in, like, there's nothing interesting to do with Waluigi in that game, you know? Like, he's already like an assist trophy and he comes out and just stomps people on the head. Like, I don't know what kind of fun moves or fighting you would do with that lanky bastard. There's just nothing.
And what's his music going to be? Who goes on there as the iconic Waluigi theme? I mean, it's just terrible. What's his stage? He doesn't do anything.
He doesn't have anything, does he? That's
the
thing.
He has nothing about him. It just matters to stop acting for this ridiculously tedious character to be one of the four picks we could have for these passes. We have so many more interesting people we could throw in. Give me Sephiroth. Oh my God, give me a remix of One Winged Angel.
Of course you want your Daddy Bad Angel.
Of course I want that guy. I want that guy hard. Him and Doomslayer. Oh.
Oh, man. Be a great fight. So as we said, you know, there's a lot of room to add more characters, a lot of fun options they can go for. So definitely going to keep an eye on that and, hope for something a bit more to my tastes next time around, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose there's been a big update on the Xbox Series X this week as well. Some dev kits have finally made them way out to some journalists so we can actually have some hands-on feedback for one of these next-gen consoles, which is out in a month.
It's a novel
about time. You know. Yeah. So why don't you run us down what's actually, you know, come out from these on hands-on impressions?
Yeah, we'll do. So, a lot of journalists now have Series X's that they can play with, but they are under quite specific embargoes about what they're allowed to do at the moment and what they can show and stuff like that. So at the moment, they've only been allowed to work with backwards compatible titles. So there's no news yet on these consoles playing actual optimized Series X games. So we'll get to that in the next couple of weeks, I'm sure, because Microsoft seems to be pretty on the ball with you know, letting the journalists, like, let us all know what's going on, which is nice, unlike the other side.
God knows what they're going to play.
That's probably why there's no Series X games showing.
And here's this game built from the ground. Oh, wait.
Sorry, we don't have one.
Does Scorn exist? Can we give them Scorn? God, is the medium there? That's got very quiet. That's got evilly quiet for a game about spirits.
It absolutely has.
That's not going bump in the night. That's just disappeared off the face of the earth. That's been Bill Murray. We're just never going to see that one.
Oh, yeah, that is very true. But so as I said, at the moment, it's all about the backwards compatible games. So what they've shown really at the moment is that we're going to be seeing vastly improved loading times on these games, just from them being on that internal super fast storage drive. So a few examples here. These are the kind of initial loading times. So, you know, the time it takes to go from the start menu of a game into the game, which is usually the biggest load time that you'll experience on a game. So yeah, these are times taken from the One X, which is already a powerful machine, and then the Series X. So you've got, let's see. So Sea of Thieves takes 1 minute, 21 seconds to load upon an Xbox One X. That's now going to be cut down to 20 seconds on a Series X. You've got Destiny 2, which takes 1 minute, 52 currently on a One X. That's going to be down to 43 seconds. Outer Worlds takes 27 seconds on a One X. That's down to 6 seconds on a Series X, which is madness. Then you've got Assassin's Creed Odyssey, 1 minute 7, that's down to 30 seconds. And Red Dead 2, which is 1 minute 35, and that's down to 52 seconds. Obviously, it's worth saying with Red Dead 2, that 1 minute 35 on the One X is already vastly quicker than the, you know, older Xbox consoles, yes. They take about 18 years. So, you know, these are already lightning fast speeds for some of them on the One X anyway. But yeah, these loading times sound crazy. And when you factor in the fact that these are the kind of big initial loads at the start of the game, like all of those loading times you kind of get used to once the game's playing. You know, a lot of games have loading screens that take what, maybe 5 seconds, 10 seconds. Like, I'd have to assume all of those are going to be getting cut down to a couple of seconds realistically. So that's going to be really nice.
I mean, we've been saying it for quite a long time now that the most hyped feature of next gen is going to be load times.
Yeah,
which easily. Is both a sad and also, I suppose, somewhat exciting aspect of, you know, the next generation. I mean, there's no games or anything really, no groundbreaking game development shifts in this generation. It's literally just going to be things load quicker. But I tell you what, once you do it, I imagine it's going to be very hard to go back to the days where they don't load quickly. I mean, God, nowadays playing a PS2 game with just like 2 minute loaded screens just kills me. And that's now. I mean, after this, it could be even worse still. But some of those drops are impressive. Like, you know, Sea of Thieves, that took a whole minute off it. That's quite impressive. That's really quite impressive.
Definitely.
And that's a big game. You know,
it really is.
And as you mentioned, these are 1X time, so this is already the more powerful console. So, you know, I'm on a normal old 1S, so this is going to be even bigger still for me. It's going to be quite the jump. It's going to be quite fun to see.
Yeah, so the another interesting side of this really is that, so all of these games, you're actually going to be able to play these on a normal external hard drive if you want to. So obviously the Series X has a 1 terabyte storage drive built in, and then you can buy this special and really quite expensive external drive that is as powerful and fast as the internal one. But as a third option, you can just plug in a big old like external hard drive full of games, but you can only use that for the backwards compatible titles. Now, the issue there is that they will then have the loading times from, you know, they'll have the older loading times of these 1 minute, 2 minute blocks, because you're not getting that fast internal drive then. So it'll be interesting to see how people act with that, you know, because I can't see myself being able to go back to slower loading times, even if it would be nice to have a big chunky storage thing sat there. Like, if I can load them on the internal drive this much quicker, there's no way I'm going to sit and play stuff on that older one.
No, I mean, it's going to be a case of just deleting stuff which you're not going to play anymore, and just, you're just going to have to get used to installing and uninstalling things, I think. I mean, we'll come to that potentially with Sony. I mean, it's certainly the amount of space on these drives, 1 terabyte seems like a lot, but I see it filling up pretty quickly.
Yeah, real fast.
In this next generation, obviously it's 1 terabyte. It'll be more like 800 anyway, once you've taken off all the OS stuff anyway. So I mean, if I'm getting an Xbox Series S, if that's only got 512, that's going to be like 450, 440 by the time it's done its OS stuff. Yeah. So I'm definitely going to be very much in the world of keeping a small amount of games installed onto it, but just regularly deleting them.
That's going to be
next gen. That's fine. It is what it is. If you get these bumps in load speed and frame rates, I don't particularly mind doing that.
Yeah, that's fair. It's worth noting as well for Series S buyers. Apparently, the Series S games are going to be smaller in file size because they're not going to make you download the 4K assets on that console, because obviously you're not going to use them on there because it's only playing stuff up to 1440p. So that's nice as well. You know, we might see game sizes on the Series S be maybe 20 or 30% smaller, which will at least account a little bit for the fact that the hard drive is half the size.
Yeah, we've got to hope that the devs put the time and effort in to make these games as tight as possible, and the way that Nintendo does on its Switch and does so well on its Switch, and which no other developer seems to care about on the PS4 and Xbox One as it is, because those game sizes are getting huge and people just don't seem to care about optimizing them down. So let's see if they do. I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't.
No, I agree, but yeah, very nice if they could.
I guess the only other feature, which is always the quick resume, and I got to see a few videos of these and people playing up to 4 or 5 games at a time and just flipping between them. And that looks like it works really well. Like just 5 second boot ups to get into the game, picks up exactly where you left off. You know, that's going to be another kind of big game changing feature for a lot of people, particularly if you do like to hot swap between games quite quickly. You've got a few on the go at the same time. That's going to be a big ease of life addition as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is going to be great. It sounds like it's going to be quite easy to manage as well. I think you're going to have a a pretty easy kind of accessible area where you can see the games that you've currently got on your quick resume, and then you can always close them if you want to, you know, bring some new games into that list and stuff. And yeah, it just looks really easy and nice and quick to use. There'll be a part of me that won't trust it for a while, because that's just, you know, like even the current consoles that we've got, the PS4s and Xbox Ones, like, to an extent, they're meant to be able to do this a little bit, like, but only for one game, obviously, you know, like you can leave one game, in theory, you're meant to be able to leave one game asleep. And then, at least on the Xbox anyway, you're then meant to be able to like open up like apps like Netflix and Disney Plus or whatever, and then go back to the game. And in my experience, that works about 95% of the time, but then sometimes I'll press on the game and it'll load as if I've not had it open. And I'm just like, you suck. Like, I've lost something now because of that. So I trust that this will work, but there'll definitely be, I won't be leaving a game in quick resume that I haven't saved in an hour for a while until I learn to trust it.
Yeah, there's definitely a big leap of faith for those early kind of times. But yeah, I'm sure it'll work well. I hope it works well, because it's one of my hyped features in the next gen where we don't have too much to get excited about, really.
Well, yeah, but, you know. I mean, really, this is just another spin on quick loading, right? Like, that's why we're hyped for it, because it's just loading again.
It's just loading, yeah.
We don't need to do the load because the game's still on. But yeah, that sounds great. And then the last kind of note we have at the moment on the Series X content we're getting from all the journalists right now is just to do with like FPS improvements, really, and general improvements to backwards compatible games that are happening completely naturally. So these are games that don't have any specific, like, nothing has been patched to make these work better on a Series X. They're just being played just in the normal way they're played on a 1X right now. And you're seeing pretty huge improvements. Like, a lot of the 1X games that run in 4K, they, you know, they very rarely manage to get anywhere near 60 FPS because, you know, they're obviously in a higher resolution and stuff. So things like Sekiro, that spends a lot of its time at 30 and 40 FPS. It drops even lower sometimes. And then you've got other games with similar issues like Monster Hunter World, Final Fantasy 15. These, you can make these all look beautiful at a middling frame rate, or you can make them look a bit worse and run at 60 on a 1X. Now, on the Series X, all of that's pretty much gone out the window, and you can just make them look as pretty as they can look, and they'll give you a solid 60 FPS without any patching or any needs to do anything different to them. So that's kind of awesome. That's, you know, this is the first time we've seen this really from games consoles, you know, like the idea that it's a very PC idea, right? Like, it's a more powerful machine, so if you run the game on it, it runs better. But we've never really had that before, because, you know, usually if you play like a backwards compatible Xbox 360 game, the game still kind of thinks it's just running on a 360, if that makes sense. So it never really could take advantage of the extra power it had. Whereas, yeah, that's not going to be the case here. And that's great to see. You know, we're in a situation where a ton of these games that are already out, the best way to play them is going to be on a Series X or Series S now.
Yeah, it's great for anybody who does have a bit of a backlog and is, you know, I mean, it's good news for Microsoft as well, because they've got very little to offer. See, they're relying on people having a backlog.
That's true.
And actually being able to enjoy that backlog in the best performance possible. And that'll be great. I mean, because everybody has one. Everybody has 6 or 7, 8, 9, 10, 50, 130 in our case, games which we have to play for, you know. So everybody's got them. It'll be nice to play them as well and as, you know, as good as they can play. And it's impressive that it's been engineered in a way which is going to allow that to happen. Mm. You know, it's as you say, a lot of the time backwards compatibility is it just somehow manages to run it. This is aiming for something slightly beyond that, which is good to know. It's good for consumers. It's good for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. So moving on then, we've got one piece of, I don't want to call it negative news coming from the Xbox camp, but it's probably, you know, rubbed a few people the wrong way. So we've had the announcement of the price of that special 1 terabyte little memory card looking thing that you can plug in, which mimics the speed and the improvements of the internal drive. So you can, you know, run all your Series X games on there to the fullest. Now, that thing is coming out at $220 or £220, which is, it's fair to say, is probably quite a lot more expensive than a lot of people were expecting for this. I know people expected it to be expensive, but I think a leak happened, or well, a now fake leak happened on Smith's Toys, good old Smith's Toys over here. They leaked it at £160, and that felt expected and right. And then, yeah, it turned out that wasn't a real price and it was actually 220. So, yeah, a bit rough. But yeah, how are you feeling about this one?
I mean, I won't buy it at that price. It's too expensive.
Yeah.
It's you know, it's deleting games and then reinstalling them. For most people, I mean, for me on my terrible internet, it's a proper hardship. Yeah. But for most people, it's not too much of the pain. You know, you're just going to have to get used to doing that. And I imagine people will get on with doing that until these things naturally come down in price as the technology gets cheaper. I mean, this always happens. Like, yeah. I'm waiting for that 1 terabyte micro SD card to come down to 100 quid for my Switch.
Yeah.
Like, it's there. It's currently £280. It will drop because I bought a 512 one for £180. It's now worth 80 quid. It will happen. Yeah. Memory always drops in price as they get better and bigger memory storages.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah. And that's the thing. It is worth noting with this thing that if you look at like comparable, like if you look at like effectively the closest comparison you can get to this drive, but for a PC, it does basically cost this much money. So like, it's not, you know, I think some people might feel like it's kind of greed or something maybe on Microsoft's part that it's such a high price, but it's actually just, it's just the state of the market at the moment for this kind of memory. It's, you know, it's new, it's fast, and it's just still really expensive. So yeah, it's definitely a premium item at the moment and something that people, you know, if you don't need it, you don't need it. Just leave it. Cause I could practically guarantee that by the end of the, you know, the next few years, you'll be able to get probably a 2 or 4 terabyte version of this thing for this price, if not a little cheaper.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's only for the real obsessives who really like to see their digital collection just laid out all in front of them. I like that on my Switch, so I get that. I have no uninstalled games on my Switch, and I have like 100 of them, which is why I'm trying to justify paying £200 for a terabyte micro SD card. You know, so I get it, but it, at that price, it's just too high at the moment. It'll come down, though. It's no big deal, I don't think.
Yeah, that's fair. I agree with that completely. I'm going to probably wait it out as well on this one. I would like to have it, but that price is, you know, that's only £30 cheaper than an entire Series S for a bit of memory. So I'd probably much sooner buy a Series S and just put it in a different room of my house and use that as a different storage drive. But nonetheless, anyway, that's pretty much all the Xbox news at the moment. We have some kind of news, kind of not news coming from the Sony camp, because obviously, while Xbox are getting the Series X out to journalists and letting them, you know, really look into it and look at the things it can do, Sony have done like none of that. You know, the PS5's out in a month and no like journalists or anyone of that kind has seen one in person, has had access to one. They don't know anything about it really at the moment, which is quite worrying, I think, for me.
Yeah, Sony, for some unbeknownst reason, seems to be very vague about some of the big features for next generation. I don't know why. We still don't know what the backwards compatibility situation is with the console. Some people think it's 100 of the top 100 played games will be available. Some say it's 99%. It could be anywhere in between all of that. We don't really know. They've not put out an official statement yet. Makes very little sense. It hasn't gone out to journalists. I know some Japanese YouTubers have got it because they're posting videos this morning. So
yeah,
they're sending some out, but they're sending it out in the newfangled influencer way. And I imagine they may do a similar thing over here as well. They'll do it. I just don't quite see why they're taking so long to do it, because as you say, it's 6 weeks now till these consoles are out. And I'm still not entirely certain how a lot of these aspects of this console is going to work. And I'm not entirely certain Sony are either, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I agree with that completely. I think, it's just a little bit frustrating really, because obviously, you know, I mean, we don't even really know how much storage space we're getting on this thing, right? Like it's because they've always billed it as 825 gig, which is, you know, pretty small. But in my head, I'd always assumed that that was them taking out that, you know, because there's always a cut that is used just for the system itself. So you can't put games on it. So in my head, I'd foolishly been like, oh, well, it'll be a 1 terabyte drive and, you know, we get 825 of it. But then now there's starting to be like little rumors coming through the cracks that maybe the actual full drive is 825 and as a user, you're only going to get like 600 odd gig, which is almost the same size as the Series S internal drive. You know, so that's that. If that's the case, that's incredibly disappointing, because I mean, for a premium product that, you know, is £400 of a disk drive, like that's not enough space. So that's worrying. And then also, you've got this, the confusion around backwards compatibility with this console is baffling, because it feels like Sony give out information and then when people ask for clarification, they just go dark. Like there's been journalists trying to get information on basic stuff. Like, for example, you know, there's this PS Plus collection of old PS4 games, and people just want to know, will my save work? You know, like, I've got a save on my PS4. Can I put that in the cloud and use it on the PS5? I mean, I'd love to know this, because I've still got a Persona 5 game that I've not finished that I'm like 85 hours into or something crazy. And like, at this point, I'd rather just wrap that game up on my PS5. But can I even do that? Or does the save not come over? Like, it's so confusing. You know, they've come out and said that you can't bring your save over for the original Spider-Man game, because that's obviously getting a remaster on PS5. So that can't come over. But your Miles Morales PS4 save can work on a PS5. But then Yakuza 7, your PS4 save can't work on a PS5. It's just like, the inconsistency is pretty embarrassing compared to the way Microsoft have dealt with this, to be honest. Well,
it's pretty telling that Microsoft has been touting backwards compatibility for quite a while now. You know, the jump from Xbox to 360, 360 to One, backwards compatibility was always a feature of their marketing message, and it's a massive feature of this jump into the next generation of Microsoft consoles. Sony hasn't done this since the PS2 played PS1 games. PS3 couldn't play anything.
PS3 was really weird, right? Because the PS3, the initial model could play PS2 discs, and then they took it out of every single other PS3, which is like...
Which is bizarre in and of itself. I'm probably told you that they weren't massively comfortable with what they were trying to do with it. It's for someone being honest recently, they don't seem to know the best way to do this. They've been caught particularly on the hop with this.
Yeah.
This is... The entire console fight, as it were, is currently being played on Microsoft terms, because Sony is just refusing to actually play to its strengths. We all know that I've got actual games coming out for its console on launch day. You know, new titles for the console people will want to play. But they're not revealing enough information about them, which is allowing Microsoft to fill the gap by just saying what its console actually does. And Sony is, for some unbeknownst reason, getting lost out on a hardware battle as well, which is just strange, because they'll win the software battle. All they need to do is prove the hardware can just do as much as an Xbox can. Even if it's slightly less, people won't massively mind, because the software makes up for it.
Yeah,
and
I completely agree.
It's been deathly silenced from them, and it is really, at this point, quite strange.
It is. I mean, because, you know, you look at stuff like the, you know, that little kind of clip of Demon's Souls on PS5 loading into the next area in like 0.4 seconds, and then the PS3 version taking like 15 seconds to do the same thing. Like, that's such a great showcase of how fast that internal drive is, because the internal drive in the PS5 is even quicker than the Xbox one. And, you know, we're seeing all these amazing loading times come up from the Xbox. So we can assume that the PS5 does that, but we have no way of knowing if, you know, backwards compatible games can take advantage of that or not, because they won't tell us. And it almost feels like the return of kind of cocky Sony to me. You know, like, this feels like the Sony that completely blitzed the PS2 generation and then tried to sell you a PS3 for like £600. And, you know, I remember there being a quote at that time where they made a joke about getting a second job or something. And like, you know, because they were just like, yeah, we're the market leader, screw it, we don't care. And then obviously the 360 managed to really, you know, drag them back to a good fight in that generation. So, yeah, I don't know. As you said, they've got the games. Like, if someone said to me, you know, I want to buy one new console, I want to play some cool new games, I'm going to tell them to get a PS5 every day. But the Xbox Series X or Series S, they, by a mile, they seem like the better options for kind of like long-term options right now, in terms of just being consumer friendly and having, you know, really good services, and also just letting you, you know, play anything you already own in a really easy way.
Yeah, it's a strange thing, isn't it? It's an interesting battle line. I mean, it is by necessity on Microsoft's part. They have to tout that it works, because they have nothing to showcase on the console itself. Like, what you're going to play on launch day on a Series S? Probably an Xbox One game. Like, that's just unfortunately what it's going to be. It's what I'm going to play. I'm not going to buy a single Series S or X game ever.
Yeah. I think so, your biggest launch title for that console is Gears Tactics, right? That's the biggest thing. And that's... You know, I like I said, it's a console launch title, because it's not been on a console, but it has been on PC for about 7 months. So, yeah, that's not good enough to run a console launch from. So, yeah, as you said, you are right. Microsoft have had to come out strong with all of this super good consumer-friendly stuff. But nonetheless, it's still great that it's there.
It is good that it's there. It should be there as well, particularly with Game Pass, because that library is old games. Like, you know, there's not going to be any Series S games on it. There's none of them are going to be optimized apart from the core first party exclusives at launch. So they have to work better to make that service worthwhile on the new console. So it's good that they're focusing on that. It's good that they're showcasing that. Because if you're going to sell Game Pass, those games need to play as well as they can on this new console. And it's good to see, and it's nice that they are playing well on it. You know, it certainly gives me more excitement for that console than a PlayStation 5, which I'm sure I'll thoroughly enjoy when I get it, but I still know very little about it, which is very strange.
Yeah, yeah, totally agree with that. But so I think with that, that's the end of the news for the week and the end of the show. So if you'd like to catch us on social media, you can find us on Twitter or Facebook at Beat the Sheet. If you want to drop us an email with some feedback or a question, you can find us at beatthesheetpodcast@gmail.com. And if you can drop us a 5-star rating or a lower star rating if you don't like us on your podcast platforms, that'd be super helpful. So thanks a lot if you could do that. But until next time, I'm Andy Wood, and I've done it, Josh. I've reached a 60% completion on the sheet this week.
That's some good work. And my name is Josh Stevenson, and I've made 51% completion on the sheet. All and right. I'm thoroughly intrigued as to why nobody is telling me to play 3DS games on this podcast. So if you do want to drop us an email and get me out of this heck and get me into some 3DS good times, please do so. I remain convinced it's the way forward.
Well, maybe it is, but we will we'll monitor those emails and we'll see what happens. Right, thanks a lot for joining us, everyone, and we'll catch you next week.
You know, we should have called it Felix the Creeper. That's what we should have called it. Sonic Creeper.